Welcome to Read, Eat, Travel, Repeat, the book club and podcast with your hosts, Sarah, Kit, and Marianne, three friends who talk about all things books, food, and travel.
Welcome, readers, eaters, and travelers to Read, Eat, Travel, Repeat, the podcast and book club where books take us beyond the page. I'm Sarah.
Kit.
And I'm Marianne.
Today we'll be talking about The Poppy Fields by Nikki Erlich. Spoiler warning for anyone who hasn't read the book yet. While we will be giving initial thoughts and ideas, eventually we will be spoiling the end.
We will let you know when we get to that point, so feel free to listen up till then, pause it, and then come back when you finish the book. And as always, we are adult readers who say adult things, although I don't think for this book. It's going to be as scandalous as some other ones.
Just be our sailor language that we tend to. There's nothing in this book that's going to
tip us over the edge.
No, for sure.
All right, let's dig in. What are our initial thoughts on this book, Sarah?
Okay, so I don't know if I ever told you guys this. The reason I picked this book up, so funny. I went to NetGalley because I was looking for some other podcast that I listened to. The girls had read The Poppy War. And it was
I've heard of that.
And I was like, oh, what was that one Poppy something? And so I literally searched for Poppy. And I didn't even know what the other book was about. Totally not like this. And I pulled this up off NetGalley and I was like reading it going, oh, I have to get this. I have to request this. This sounds amazing. I read it so quickly, immediately when I got it, and I was blown away. It was one of those books that I could not stop thinking about. I could not stop like talking to people about it. Like I needed, you know, when you read a book and you're like, I need you to read this so I can talk to you about it.
Right, right.
Because it's so deep. Yeah, I'm like, read it. Yeah, read it. Even right the now. Other day I brought it in and my our school secretary, she's like, well, I'm looking at books to read. What do you think I should recommend? And I was like, The Poppy Fields. You have to read it. It's so good. It's so good for book clubs.
That's the
and
one.
And things like that. I still think about it. Like, it's still one of those things that sticks with me. And I want to tell everyone about it. And I think I want to try to get it approved to teach.
Wow.
I think in 10th grade honors, it would be an amazing book to. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because there's really no adult content. I mean, it's
no,
really,
it's, yeah. And it's a lot of great conversation can happen. And of course, from a literary standpoint, when we get further in the whole tie-in. With Wizard of Oz,
for sure.
Obviously the Poppy Fields. So it's really good for like literary conversation. So yeah, what about you, Kit?
I listened to you when you came on the podcast and said, I need everyone to read this book right now. I think I requested it. I use Edelweiss as to get my ARCs. I think I requested it before we were even done like recording. I was like already on the computer. I'm like, can I find this? And I got approved a few days later. And similar to you, I read it in like one sitting. Like I obsessed immediately because I don't read a ton of books that are like deep thinkers. Like that's not really my general MO, but I do like it when a book kind of digs in and makes you question what you're thinking and why you're thinking it. And there are so many different parts to this book where I just kept going, okay.
Exactly.
And like, again, I read it in May maybe. And I'm still telling people about it and thinking about it. And what would I do if I was in a similar position?
Okay.
Like, it's a phenomenal book. How about you, Marianne?
Okay. So I'll be the party pooper here. I mean, I liked it. I gave it 4.5 stars. I said it would be a great book club book because there is so much to talk about and think about.
Yeah.
I did like one of the choices one of the characters made at the very end. I thought that spoiled the book for me. And also, you know, I don't want to say I struggled with my dad having passed away because he's been gone for 23 years. So obviously my life has gone on. But I guess it just stirred up some memories.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think that was hard. So it is somewhat triggering if you've had a loss that, you know, still gets to you. And I think like you two said too, Kit, I mean, even though I don't read quite the same genres that you do, I still like things that don't make me have to think as much. And this definitely makes you want to think. So I think that's why I didn't like rave about it like the English teacher did.
Like I said last time, sometimes I need something a little more cerebral. I'm like, I need to think a little more, but
are you calling us dumb?
No, because I also read trash. So
okay.
Sarah, and if we're being 100% honest, I had never read a romance book in my entire life until Sarah handed me, was it Jude Devereaux?
Judy Devereaux.
Like 15 years. So this is, everything I read is technically your fault. Yeah, that was my gateway drug.
We're going to blame my mom because she let 12-year-old me read those. So.
Yeah. All right. So those are our initial reactions to the book kind of when we first read it. But let's dig in a little deeper. Before we do that, let me give you a brief synopsis of what this book is about. This book is The Poppy Fields. Like we said, it's by Nikki Ehrlich. Here is the synopsis. Welcome to the Poppy Fields, where there's hope for even the most battered hearts to heal. Here in a remote stretch of the California desert lies an experimental and controversial treatment center that allows those suffering from heartache, of loss, to sleep through their pain and keep on sleeping. After patients awaken from this prolonged state of slumber, they will finally be healed, but only if they are willing to accept the potential shadowy side effects. On a journey to this mystical destination are four very different strangers and one little dog. Ava, a book illustrator, Ray, a fireman, Sasha, an occupational therapist, Sky, a free spirit, and a friendly pup named PJ. As they attempt to make their way from the Midwest all the way west to the poppy fields, where they hope to find Ellis, its brilliant, enigmatic founder, each of their past secrets and mysterious motivations threaten to derail their voyage. This is a high-concept, speculative novel about heartache, hope, and human resilience. The Poppy Fields explores the path of grief and healing, a journey at once profoundly universal and unique to every person, which poses the questions, how do we heal in the wake of a great loss, and how far are we willing to go in order to be healed? Which is a lot. That's a lot of synopsis. It's deep.
But it shows you how deep this book is, but also not. Like, you can read it at a surface level, or you can...
For sure.
It could get you thinking, for sure.
I don't think we ever read books like this at a surface level.
No, I don't. Like,
immediately messaging each other like, oh my God, can you believe? Which brings us to the plot point.
Our first topic, plot point, grief and loss.
Grief, just right, diving right into the deep end, because that is really what's at the heart of this book is grief and loss and how you either move through it or choose to not move through it. Because that's really what the Poppy Fields is. It's a sidestep, I feel like, around moving through the grief and loss.
Yeah. Yeah. I was with Ma on this a little bit in terms of when I was a teenager, I had a lot of loss. Like from the time I went to my first funeral when I was 5 years old.
Wow.
Because my 6 year old cousin was hit by a car.
Oh my God.
Funerals were so normal in my family, but
yeah, I know what you mean.
You know, my grandmother died of cancer, and then my great aunt and uncle were killed in a car accident. My grandfather was killed in a car accident. Like, just a lot. I had a cousin, the biggest one, a cousin when I was 11, he was 11, I was 13, died unexpectedly with they still don't have a medical reason of why this happened.
My God.
Still bothers me when I think about it. And around the anniversary of his death or his birthday, I find myself like depressed. So for me, I think that's why one of the things I liked so much about this book is the notion that we do all grieve differently. And would I have chosen that? Would I have wanted to go to sleep if given the option?
Mm-hmm.
You know?
And I think I would.
Yeah.
And I think some of that has to do with kind of what your natural inclination is when dealing with tough things. I don't want to say I'm like a runawayer, but I'm a compartmentalize and put it away. I don't want to think about it. I don't want anything to do with it. And when things get really hard, I'm definitely a ghoster where I'm just going to go. I'm going to leave. And I'm not going to talk to you anymore. Like, I'm just going to go. And I think for me, as I was reading this book, without getting to the risk versus reward quite yet.
Yeah.
I think for me at surface level, given the option to just sleep through the pain, because if I remember correctly, it's like a 1 month or 6 weeks to sleep through your grief.
Yeah. Yeah. 4 to 6 weeks, depending on the nature of your
Right. And then when you wake up, supposedly you will feel better about it.
Yeah.
I think I would do it. I think I would go, you know, especially if like the pain is that bad that I can't get past it on my own. Like I've tried other things. It's not working. I'm in my head about it. It hurts too much. I'm unable to like go to work or do the things I enjoy. You know, you're in a deep depression is kind of, you know, where you're supposed to be before you apply to go to the poppy field.
Right.
You know, you're supposed to have kind of exhausted other options. I think I would do it. Immediately, I'd go, yeah, like if this is the opportunity for me to continue to live life, I'll take the 6 weeks.
Yeah.
I don't know what I would do. I mean, I don't know. I feel like you have to work through stuff. I don't know. I guess I'm just skeptical of an easy way, quote unquote, easy way out. And I don't know. This is going to make me emotional. I don't know.
I know.
And I guess I just think about, well, first of all, logistically, for most people, how many people can really afford to lose, you know, 6 weeks of their lives?
Which
to
they
do
talk
that?
About. Yeah. That's one of the things that comes up is who can leave, not even affording it, but also who can leave their family?
Right.
Are you able to, do you have young kids at home? Can you leave your children at home for 6 weeks? And
what are you potentially losing out on by doing that?
Which I think is why it makes it not the easy way out, because there's still, you're risking an awful lot. And that's even before we get to the big risk. I feel like you got to be desperate at that point.
Well, and Kit, you made a good, I didn't think about this with myself, but I 100%, when I get overwhelmed and stressed, I get tired.
Exhausted.
Like my body is like, you just need to sleep and shut down and things will be better.
Yeah.
And so I feel like I would be one of those people that I do feel better usually, but then also not, because the difference between taking a nap when you're like depressed or whatever is your problems are still there when you wake up. So it'd be different if you could, I don't know, maybe if I could take a nap for a month, I might feel differently, but...
Right.
But
there's just also the creepiness factor that like you're in this room full of people sleeping, and I don't know. I would feel very vulnerable, and I don't know. There's something about it that I don't think I would want to do this. If there's something that could alleviate your grief to a certain extent, I just don't know that I would want to do this.
Yeah.
You know, not even knowing about the potential side effect that, I just don't, there's just something about laying in a room with, if they had maybe individual cubicles, I might feel more comfortable. But then again, I just would feel so vulnerable. Like we don't know what they're doing to you while you're sleeping.
Right.
You know, what's the oversight here?
That's what some of those who critique the center say.
Yes. Yes, exactly.
Have either of you watched the movie Inception?
Yeah.
Leonardo DiCaprio.
A while ago, but yeah.
You know me, I don't watch.
My gosh. So this movie, I show this movie in my film class. It is about, it's so hard to explain, but also not. It's shared dreaming, but people like committing crimes in the shared dream. Like, I'm going to share a dream with you, but you don't know I'm sharing a dream, and I'm going to hijack your mind and convince you of something.
Wow.
So it's kind of like... but there's a scene in there where they're trying to find the chemist. They need a chemist for this big heist they're going to do because he has to mix the right cocktail, basically, that leaves like inner ear function so that a fall could wake you up or things like that. And they're all laying in beds in the whole room. And it's kind of creepy because all you hear is like the pump of like the machines and the medicine like going, and you're like, oh, that's so weird. So when I think of this, even though they're all wearing red pajamas and they're all laying in this big room, like thousands of them, isn't there like 5,000?
It's like an insane amount. And they're talking about expanding.
It makes me think about that scene where all these people are dreaming deep in a dream. And they do talk about like, why would anyone want to do this? And a lot of the people that are doing it are older. And the guys, like, sometimes this is the best life they have. Like, there's nothing else other than in their dreams. So it's kind of,
that makes me sad.
Yeah.
Well, if you think about it, like, in terms of the poppy fields, like, now that you say that, I think, like, that's got to be what's going through some of the people's heads as they head into the poppy fields, is that, what life do I have outside of this?
Yeah.
Right.
Like, if it's that bad that I'm willing to take, you know, the chance on sleeping for 6 weeks, like this might be the best option. I might not have the life that I want to have or that I hoped I'd have. And grief for some people is like so all encompassing.
Yeah.
Any chance to get that back is.
Well,
is
and it makes me wonder, do they dream?
Do I hope so or do I not hope so? I don't know.
I've been having so many weird dreams and a lot of them are like anxiety dreams lately.
Yeah.
Like last night I had this crazy dream that I was like, had like, I was teaching, I don't know, elementary school kids and I took them on a field trip and they were running all over the place and I couldn't corral them and it was crazy. And I woke up like all stressed out about it. So I kind of hope they don't have crazy dreams.
Yeah, I hope so. Maybe they're like suggesting happy dreams, calming dreams.
Hopefully.
So when you wake up, you're actually rested.
Right. But you know what you're talking about, though? It's really why it would, like, and I said in my book review, it would make such a great book club book. So there are so many layers that you could talk
about.
The
conversations you can have.
Yes. Yes, sure. Definitely.
I found, too, that it showed me how personal grief is.
Yeah.
Because all four people who are on this surprise road trip to the poppy fields, they're all going for different reasons.
Yeah.
But they're all grieving different things and in different ways. And I think that's important to remember because sometimes people think, I lost my grandmother too and I didn't feel this way. I don't know why you're so upset about it or whatever, but it's because we all grieve differently.
Yeah. You know, it's
an important message and an important conversation to have.
It's so weird is because I still, you know, when I think about my dad, sometimes it just still hits me. And he would have been the first one to say, hey, I've been gone for 23 years. You should be over it by now. Because like he couldn't understand like why my cousin would still get emotional about her mother having passed away. Mm-hmm. And he was just more, what's the word I'm thinking of?
Pragmatic.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. And you know, I think religion plays into that though too, because like he was Catholic, and so
if you're
a
religious person and what your beliefs are,
I think you
are,
deal with it differently if you feel like there's going to be an afterlife, and sometimes, you know, not that I cry about my dad ever. I mean, not like cry, but I get teary. You know, I think about things I wish I could ask him about, and you know, so you're definitely right.
I get teary over weird things.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I'm kind of over it now because I do this every year. But when I was young, my grandmother made us peel the potatoes for mashed potatoes on Thanksgiving and Christmas every year. I hated it. I was terrible at peeling potatoes. Hated it. Rolled my eyes. Her gift to me before I got married, and she did not survive to my wedding. She had cancer and she died about six weeks before I got married. And so we'd been talking before then. And I'm like, I know you're not going to be at my wedding, Grandma. It's okay. And all this stuff. And she had bought a potato scrubber for me and gave it to my mom to give me at a shower. Because her whole thought was, it like, Sarah, if you scrub the potatoes, you never have to peel them. But now somehow my family has made me in charge of making mashed potatoes every Thanksgiving. Yeah. And I always, for a split second, as I have the potatoes, and now it doesn't bother me. I can peel them so fast.
Yeah.
But I just think for a hot second.
Yeah. And that's the same with me and my dad.
But I don't sit and like cry about it. I'm just like, Grandma, thinking of you. Like, you know, but it's still there, you know? And it's the same thing. It's been I've been married almost 25 years. So she died in 2001. So 24 years.
Well, like I was just teaching about 9/11 in school, and I was on top of the World Trade Center on August 6, 2001 my mom and dad and the kids. And so just teaching about that all day just brought up all these thoughts about my dad.
And, for sure.
You know, that's the kind of thing that it just kind of hits you in the gut and you kind of, you know, brings back memories, but it doesn't impact my life. It doesn't stop me from going on, but it still just is there. Like a scab that just kind of gets, you know, disturbed now and then, but the scab is there. Yeah.
You never get over it.
Yes.
You move forward, but you don't get over.
Mm-hmm. And that's why I guess, you know, I know we haven't gotten to like the important quotes yet, but the one quote that I put down and I had highlighted after he died, I just had to think, if it hurts this much now, Donna said, then I must have been pretty lucky.
Yeah.
And I think that hurt
Yeah.
Also is a reminder of how good you had it. So do you want to just forget it all?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Well, I think that brings us to kind of that, to jump ahead a few plot points there to the risk versus reward.
Yeah. So are we going to start with spoilers now? Or?
Yeah. So we'll get into some spoilers now, friends, because I don't think there's any way to talk about
it. It's hard
about
not
it
to
without...
talk more about this book without spoilers, but.
Yeah. But everyone else, go read this.
If you haven't read it, read it and come back for this conversation.
Because to your point, Marianne, like it, if you're grieving someone that much, it means that they meant an awful lot to you and had a very big part of your life. And there's two outcomes of sleeping at the poppy fields. One is that you just wake up with your grief kind of dulled. Like you haven't lost memories. You haven't.
Maybe like
you know,
we
you know,
talk about where it's like you might have a moment where you think about them and you're like, but you can move on.
Almost, almost like jumping years ahead in the grieving process.
Exactly. Yeah. Right.
So you still kind of have all the good, but you're getting rid of those pieces that are holding you in place or holding you back or making
or that
it hard
just
for you
debilitating
to function.
That is stopping you from functioning.
Right.
Yeah.
But the flip side, I think it's one in four, right? One in four people who sleep at the poppy fields wake up with no memories, that good or bad, left.
Right. Or they have memories, don't they?
Know,
but they don't.
Yeah.
They're not emotionally connected to them.
So
they know the person, but they don't have any.
But there's no the memories aren't
that
good.
That
attachment
is gone.
They're just there.
Yeah.
So,
it felt like it was like they're very apathetic.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So my grandma died. Okay.
That's that's where you get to kind of like the risk portion of it. Like, is it worth sleeping for 6 months on the offhand chance at 25% that when you wake up, you will have lost kind of the good feelings about this person as well?
What I found so interesting about that concept too, and it goes back to the grief and loss with the risk and reward. You have to remember what that does to the people around you.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you are a couple and you're grieving the loss of a child and one goes to the poppy fields to sleep and comes back completely apathetic, that does things to the spouse then who's like, but what if I want to talk? What if I need to get this? And the spouse and the wife or whatever is like, it was something
happens.
That happened. So I thought that was interesting too, that how we grieve, how it affects those around us.
Yeah,
and
that's
how
a really
they
good
grieve.
Point.
The people that are really close to us, how do they grieve about it?
Mm-hmm.
You know, can they talk about it? Can they, you know, because we all have these people in our family who like never talk about it.
Right.
They don't want to bring it up. But others might be like, we talk about it a lot because they're, just different. So I thought that was the risk reward is almost, that risk is almost higher because if you have other family out there or other people that,
You're not just losing the relationship with the person who's gone. You're risking the relationship with the people who are left.
Who are the people who are left and had a relationship with the person that's gone, you know?
And that ties into what somebody said before about like other people judging you for how you grieve. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, if you're just indifferent to that person, you know, you're going to be ostracized from many people who are going to think, wow, you don't even care about
them. You don't even care anymore.
Yeah, what's wrong with you?
Yeah.
And for you, you've gone to sleep for, you know, a month or so, and you knew what you were getting into. You knew what the risks were. You sign off. You have, like, you have to go to, like, interviews and this, that, the other. Like, you know what the risk is. You're hoping that you're in the 75% instead of the 25%.
Right. Yeah.
But for the people that you come back to, that's an overnight change for them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like they're welcoming you back, expecting one thing. And I'm sure they know that like there's this potential risk, but until you're actually face to face dealing with it, there's no way to prepare for what that's going to feel like.
Yeah.
For you to say, you know, if to go back to your example, Sarah, you know, you're like, oh, remember that time that we did X, Y, and Z with our kid? And the other person's like, I remember
we took a trip, but I don't, you know.
Yeah.
They don't get emotional when they look at pictures or whatever.
Right.
And
which has to be like devastating for the person left behind.
And it's one of those things too. I remember my pediatrician when one of the girls were born telling us about, you know, especially here in Florida, because we have so many pools, they would warn us about like drownings
swimming,
and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And they would just talk about how like, I forget, like 50 or 75% of couples who experience like the loss of a child,
they
don't make it.
They
get divorced. You know, so think about that's going to happen to your other relationships. If one of you is, you know, grieving and the other one's like, okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
We had a kid.
Yeah. I know my aunt, my aunt and uncle and my godparents who lost a child, they're both still together. And I think about that statistic all the time of how difficult. And they had other kids. So I think they probably stayed together because you kind of with grief too, you kind of have to because you have other kids that need you or whatever. Mm-hmm. But I think that, that's fascinating to me. And it's so funny about this book too. I feel like we have these deep conversations, but it's not written.
No.
It's a little more flippant when you read it. Like it's it's not a super depressing book.
Well, and I think it has to be that way because I think if it was all like doom and gloom, who would want to read through it? And, you know, you'd probably give up on it. And, you know, there's a quote, there's an old, you guys probably don't know Irma Bombeck, but she was a humor columnist and she wrote some books about basically about being a woman, a housewife and things like that. Like one of her books was The Grass is Always Greener Over the Septic Tank.
So true.
There's a quote of hers that's always gotten me through, which is if you can laugh at it, you can live through it. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's probably why she had to write this book in a lighter way, because if it was all doom and gloom, nobody was going to want to get through it and get to the other side. So,
Well, and I think the way it's written with kind of like all the different threads and strands from the different characters coming together eventually in ways that maybe you're not ready for. Mm-hmm. But I think what was really good about the way that it was written was that she made you care about these characters apart from their grief.
Yes. Right.
So I went back and I read the first couple chapters just to kind of like refresh my mind. And I was struck by how like at the start, you have no idea why these people are traveling.
Yeah.
Like that the grief is not the most important part of their personality.
Yes.
At the outset of the book, she really makes you care about each of these individual characters as themselves, separate from the grief. And then as they start to give each other little bits of their stories, you're kind of following along with them and starting to realize like the pain that they're in.
Yes.
How they deal with their grief, how they can lean on each other. Uh-huh. And in for each character differently, like how do building these new relationships impact the reasons why they're going to the poppy fields? Because at the outset, they're all traveling on their own, with the exception of PJ the dog. But by the end, they've built these new relationships that can't help but impact how they arrive at the poppy fields.
Yeah.
Well, that's really good. That's very insightful. Well,
it goes to the found family. They find something in common being grief.
Yes.
And that's what actually brings them.
And if you think about it, if you got into a car with three strangers, you're not going to trauma dump on them right away. You're going to
for sure.
Slowly talk about, that's really nice weather today. Or, lucky we lived through that tornado that destroyed the airport.
Right.
And, you know, you're talking about all surface level stuff. But then as time goes by, you slowly reveal yourself to each other. So, you know, that kind of ties all in together, too, about the found family. And, you know, somebody's not your family right away. It takes a while for them to become that close to you.
Right. Yeah. Right. And they don't all dump it right away either.
No.
They just kind of one at a time. And as they like, okay, well, you shared your story.
Yeah.
So, okay, I can share my story.
Yeah.
And then I can
feel safe
mine
with you now. So I can add, I can share my story.
Of course, all revolving around one of our favorite things, which is a road trip.
Yeah. I was going to say, and it's all, it really at the heart is like just a standard road trip.
Where
like,
things happen that things are unexpected happen. And you have to deal with it, and it kind of makes people, closer trauma bonding, I guess.
Yes. But not like the trauma that, like, it's a different trauma because y'all just lived through a tornado.
Right, right, right.
So you have this other thing in common that you can kind of like build on.
Yeah.
And I do always love like TV, movies, books, whatever, where you're just like, well, I guess we're going to throw in our lot together and see.
Right.
How it goes, because it's never simple, but it's always, as things kind of arise and happen, it's always entertaining. And I think that made a nice balance to kind of the more serious destination that they were going to.
Yeah. Yeah. Some of the funny stories in between that they talk about or things like that, I really liked. So what about advances in science?
The entire time, the first time I read it, and now, was thinking about, to go back to Jurassic Park last week, when Dr. Malcolm, one of my favorite characters of all time, says, just because you can doesn't mean you should.
Doesn't mean you should.
Like, you never stop to think about whether or not you should. And I think that is kind of like at the forefront with Ellis, who we get kind of her story interspersed in with the road trip.
Yes.
Of how she ended up, you know, building the poppy fields, what her goals were. We don't really know her why right away. So at the start, it feels very much like, you know, the stereotypical like evil scientist wanting to like do more. And I can do this without a lot of heart and emotion behind it. Mm-hmm. And then as it, you know, you continue on, you realize that she was hurting. And she was trying to resolve her own pain. And if she can resolve it for herself, why wouldn't you want to resolve it for everybody?
Right.
But the advances in science, man, like, you are taking an awful big risk on a lot of it.
She does. I feel like Ellis does. She's aware of that a little. Like, everyone wants her to start a second poppy field. Yeah. And like, hold on. Let's
pump the brakes.
She doesn't want to jump in, but also... Yeah.
Something I was just thinking about when you were just talking about that, like, we don't know that Ellis is female at first, right? So I think that name is designed to throw us off track because we kind of think of this this male scientist who's like manipulating the strings.
Manipulating, controlling. Yep.
And I think that's to throw us off a little bit too.
She talks about that. I just reread that. Maybe a quarter of the way through the book, she talks about her name. And Ellis being her middle name, specifically, she liked it because it was non-gendered. So she didn't want anyone to not agree with her or not give her funding because she was a female scientist.
Sad, but true. So even science has advanced, but, you know, society has not.
Right.
You know, where you have to not pretend, but you have to disguise your identity so that you can be taken seriously.
Well, Kit, you mentioned one of the things that I liked about this book, too, because, you know, I'm being the English literary person. I love a full circle thing.
Yes.
It's told through third person, each character, the chapters, but also interspersed with interview transcripts, articles, podcast discussions, and it all connects at the end. But you don't know that when you're reading it. And I loved that, how it kind of... gave you a little bit of insight of like, here's our story, but also here's what people think about the poppy fields. Mm-hmm. Right? Here's more of our story. And then here's another thing about the poppy fields. And here's an interview. And this is why this person was rejected. And I liked that a lot. It just kind of broke it up in a good way to give you
and
more
it
understanding.
Made you, more understanding, but also made you really think about like, oh, like that person, like, because Ray has different information than Sky has different information than, you know.
Yeah.
Everyone, you know, Alice is operating from one perspective over here. And as they start adding in these interviews and podcasts, you're like, oh, so Ray knows this.
Yes.
But other people do not.
But other people don't. So you kind of put it, it just kind of goes together nicely.
You're piecing it together. And like, Sasha has these pieces of the story that other people don't have. And I really liked how like, it was almost like a little puzzle that you were putting together.
Yes.
As you went and started to make decisions that people made or things that people said started to make more sense as you went along.
Yep. Kind of you get to the end and you go, wait a second. Yeah. Let me go back to the beginning. Whoa. Didn't they say this earlier? How did I miss that kind of thing? So I like just the way it was written to me, really. Yeah.
Totally agree.
All right. So our symbolism.
Yes. Here we go with this. Atlas had this whole part of the conversation. All I could think about was way back when we were on Twilight Moms and we would like. The stuff that we pulled out of Twilight was insane.
I know, that's crazy.
Our fractured fairy tales we talked about. Oh my gosh. I loved that though.
And
that was like my favorite.
Reading this book reminded me of that a lot when we were like messaging back and forth and whatnot. Yeah. Because I remember back in the day, like someone, not one of us, but someone else would post a question or a theory and we would all like text each other and be like, get to the Fractured Fairy Tales. And we'd all like converge on it to be like, yes, let's have
a discussion. We would do it under the guise of we are moderators and we have to make sure proper things are being said. So I'd tell my husband, I got to get on. There's some action going on here and I got to fix it. And really it was, I got to get on this conversation.
Yeah, right. Because we're talking about Beauty and the Beast.
Just think about how like we would dissect just the littlest bit of text. Like, was it like when Edward leaves Bella that note that says be safe? And I mean, I think I'm sure we had a whole forum about
and
that.
I think we talked about it for days.
Yes. I went out and bought books so that I could like better participate. Like, I forget who brought up the Joseph Campbell book back in the day, but I remember being like, I gotta have it on my shelf.
Same thing.
Be able to reference this shit. Mm-hmm. So like the way we dug into that book, insane, first of all. But it did, this book reminded me of that in terms of like the symbolism that we found and whether or not it was intentional, which I think a lot of it was intentional.
Yes.
But it's really fun to speculate and see parallels and be like, oh, that could be why the author did X, Y, and Z.
Well, you know, what's funny is when we first got started and I glanced down at, I'm not sure who wrote in like some of the notes here about the about Sasha and Gray and whatever. And I went, whoa, oh, wow.
That was Sarah.
Okay. Our English teacher.
Yes.
But it just made like so much sense when I saw it. It just like, okay. Cause like, what's Dorothy looking for? She, you know, she's looking to go home and Sasha's doing that in a way too.
Yeah.
To like reconnect.
Single-minded. She's single-minded. Yes. She just wants to.
Yeah. The same, well, you know, a different, not literally home, but to like reconnect with, I don't know where I guess we're in the spoiler part.
We're already spoiled. We're there.
With her sister and just like, just kind of blew my mind looking at this.
Well, it was interesting because having listened to this the first time and then I bought the book and the author's note in the end and how Nikki states that her inspiration was The Wizard of Oz and the Poppy Fields.
Right.
And the notion, and she was reading it, when we talk about grief, when she was really upset and feeling lost over something and how she thought how nice it would be to just lie down in a field of poppies and sleep, which I think is cool. And then it was funny, though, because I feel like I was halfway through the book because I was like, wait, it starts in Kansas. They have a tornado. They're driving a yellow car.
Yeah.
This is the Wizard of Oz. What the heck?
Yes.
How did I miss that? There's a dog and four people in a car.
And I think all of it was intentional, but she didn't explicitly say.
We went
back through and we were like searching the text to be like, does she ever even mention the Wizard
of Oz?
No, the Wizard of Oz,
I don't think.
No.
And see, because I have ARC, I don't think I have that author's note. So
The thing too. I was like, oh, I wouldn't have, if I had just had my audio, because it was the audio ARC. So sometimes, you know, if it's like when it's an audible, it'll continue on with the author's note at the end or whatever. And I'm just like, huh.
Because it's got acknowledgements, but it doesn't have an author's note, which is different. So,
yeah. And of course, me with my titles, I like it when the Poppy Fields means something more in the fact that she names this facility the Poppy Fields. The people all look like a field of poppies when they're sleeping in their red pajamas, like a field of them. I find fascinating. So yeah, I put that I thought Sasha was kind of Dorothy. She was also the one that was like, I feel like she had a big plan. Like, we have to keep doing this. We have to keep going.
Yes.
Right.
And Ray.
And Dorothy was kind of the ringleader. She was the one who was like, hey, let's go find
the
wizard.
Let's do this. Yeah. And Ray being the Tin Man, I think by the end he gets a heart, but I think he's struggling so much with his grief that he can't. He's too angry. He's like angry. He doesn't have, he comes across as kind of heartless because he's so angry.
Yeah. I think he doesn't want to feel.
Like, no, he doesn't want to feel.
He does, but he doesn't. Like, he's.
Right.
And that's why I was so disappointed. Hurt. I think that he wanted to do the sleep because if he comes out on the other side and ends up with the complication, then
or if he's still heartless at the end or
he's
whatever.
He's
going to
be more heartless, you know? So I think that's what made me angry at the end. I hate it when I get all the way through a book and then something at the end, like,
because I thought, I liked how he finally realized why his brother did it.
Yes.
And because he realized it, he went, okay, I understand. And I want to do it too.
You know, and I was just thinking about this, though, too, is like it when you have that kind of reaction to a book, it means that the author got to you. Yeah. So it's not necessarily like a negative thing that when you get mad about the ending of a book. It's just because these people were real to you.
Yeah.
And
that's very true.
And if you didn't care about them, you wouldn't be angry.
Yeah.
And I always go back to this from like years and years ago, the idea of a story, whether it's a movie, a book, TV show, whatever, the characters should have the ending they need and not the ending you want.
We've talked about that before.
For Ray, for me at least, like, did I want him to sleep? Not necessarily, but I think he needed to. Like, I think that's kind of the culmination of his journey.
He realized how he was dealing with his grief was not healthy.
Was not working. And that this was going to offer him the best chance of moving through it. So, and I think when you're looking at the story as a whole, someone has to sleep. Because the idea of everyone dealing with grief differently and that everyone has a different journey to go on, if it ended and everyone was just like, oh, we're good now, we made it, thank you, it wouldn't have necessarily wrapped up all the strings the way that the story needed. So I think somebody had to sleep. And I think of the characters, Ray made the most sense.
Yeah. And I like two of the four. Well, Skye wasn't really ever going to the poppy fields, but ends up hooking, you know, up with
them en
route for a little while. That at the beginning, you think they're all going there to sleep.
Yes.
And it took a while. And as their stories emerge, then you start to go, okay, like, I see, you know, this is why you want to be there. So, yeah, that's why I had Skye kind of as the scarecrow. Not that she's brainless, but she was like 18 and I don't have a care in the world kind of thing.
She's just in it
perpetually happy and just like the...
Yeah, she hasn't had that life experience.
She wanted that life experience. She wanted the life experience to go around. And then Ava, I thought Ava was like Dorothy. I think because the story follows her first. But then I was like, as I'm reading, I'm going, she's scared of everything.
Yeah.
She's scared to leave her house. She hates flying. She doesn't want to do this. She doesn't. She lives in her small neighborhood and she's just worried. And it's finally this notion that she can patch things up with her sister that makes her want to journey, which I think is kind of.
And I think she was like kind of riding this like balance of being afraid of everything, but also so desperately wanting to like feel like she had control of something.
Wanting to be brave. Yeah. Too.
Yeah. Like and she wanted to make a choice and she wanted to do something that meant something.
And the cowardly lion wanted to be brave, but
wanted to be brave, but needed. And Dorothy helped him take the first steps, which is what Sasha does because Sasha's like, you're coming with me.
Yeah.
And she's kind of like, I can go home and wait. Like, I can go home and wait a few days. And Sasha's like, we got a car. Let's go.
Let's go.
Both need to go. So she like instigates, makes it happen.
I just realized I think I got Sasha and Ava mixed up at first because I was thinking Sasha was the sister, but Ava's the sister.
No, Ava's the sister.
Yeah. Yep. Shouldn't have two names that have two A's in them.
I know. I'm like, All right. What about, we ready for some quotes?
Yeah.
I already started, but
I know. They're so good. I feel like I could have quoted this entire book.
I pared it down. Like I had so many highlights that I didn't even remember highlighting that many things. Yeah. And when I went back in, I was like, but I think a lot of them, for at least a couple of them that I put in there, are very like closely connected. Like it's the theme of grief comes up obviously a lot. But the first one I put in there was we were just talking about Skye and how she was just like a fly by the seat of her pants. And actually the quote I put down like a little bit contradicts that, but not really, because she says there's a whole paragraph that goes with this. But I pulled out the parts that like I kind of thought spoke to Skye's character best. You know, one of the other characters is like, aren't you afraid? Like, you seem to just be like going on a whim and like whatever strikes your fancy. Like, aren't you afraid? You know, you must never be afraid. You're so brave or whatever. And she's like, no, it's actually because I am afraid. And then she talks about Greek mythology and the fates and how like the string theory of eventually your string just runs out and that's the end for you. And you don't know when it's going to happen. And she says, I'm afraid of looking back on these years and feeling like I wasted time. I'm afraid of missing out on life.
And you know what makes me think, okay, I don't know. she's like a foil, is it, for Ava, like, who is missing out on life because she's scared of everything.
But she's scared of everything. Yeah.
Did I get the English terminology right?
A foil or a doppelganger. Could be a doppelganger too. But
you know that she's showing Ava what she's missing.
Yeah.
You know, Ava's scared of her own shadow, but Sky is, you know, willing.
Afraid, but does it anyways.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which I like that. And I also thought that it a little bit connects to the idea of, like, you know, when they're talking about who would sleep, aren't you afraid of the risk, this, that, the other. She's afraid of missing out. So if you're someone who's so deeply hung up in your grief or to the point that you're, like, incapacitated, you cannot function on a daily basis. You're missing out on life because you're afraid to take this chance or you're afraid to take this risk. And if you do it anyways, do it afraid, you might come out the other side better for it. There's a risk to it, but you might come out better for it.
Yeah. Yeah. Who says this next one?
I don't remember. I put all of these next ones in, but I don't remember.
I know. The moment when you realize that your world and the world are entirely separate, when your world has come to a grinding halt, when you're drowning and flailing about and the world just rolls on without you.
I swear, like, that's the hardest thing.
And that is, like, I feel Nikki Erlach had to have gone through some grief because that sums it up. That sums up loss. When you're like, I don't understand how people can keep moving on when you're still thinking, feeling this way. It's so hard.
The next quote kind of
talked about that a little bit.
Yeah.
But,
The next one kind of digs into, like, how what grief is for the individuals. So the next one is, the thing about grief is that it's never just grief. For Sasha, grief is also fear. Fear that she might never love again. Fear of her unknown future. For Ray, grief was also anger. Anger at the way he'd lost his brother, at the place he blamed for taking him. And for both, grief was guilt. It was living with the question, how much was my fault, and wondering what you could have done differently.
Yeah.
Which is so, I love the Sasha Ray comparison because they both felt guilty.
Yeah.
And Sasha wants to sleep and Ray was angry.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like different ways of handling that, which I think is really.
Yeah. And I think go ahead.
No, I was going to say, like, when we lose somebody, I think guilt is a predominant thing because all the woulda, coulda, shouldas, you know, when you can't fix them, you know, so guilt is huge for everybody. But
So I found a couple more that I think would add in here before we go to the other one. When Ellis and Ava are finally talking, Ellis says, Ellis had already come to believe that we all grieve on our own. Our love is ours alone to give and ours alone to mourn. And in the end at the poppy fields, everyone sleeps alone. But Ellis had witnessed many faces of grief and she'd go on to see many more. How could she not have wondered back then what grief looked like on Ava? So it's like her realization that I've watched all these people sleep and I see that grief is different for every person.
Yeah.
But I didn't think about my own sister.
Yeah, you left the one person that needed you the most.
The last one, it's so interesting because it's from one of the extra, it's an opinion. Why would anyone sleep at the poppy fields? And it says, the reason anyone would choose to sleep is the same reason I never could. Love changes us. It strengthens us and dents us and lifts us and guides us. If we sleep, if we suffer the side effect, if we're no longer shaped by the people we love, who are we? And that was toward the end of the book. I remember reading that going, dang, that's profound. Right?
I think you could say about this whole book, it's pretty profound. It's like, it may make you really think about dealing with grief and is there an easy way out? And do you want the easy way out?
Really? Okay, is this your last one or is this?
Yep, this is my last one. You can see because I added outside quotes that were not from the book. So the last one I put in was, this was the other side of love. This was the aftermath. The cost, the opposite end of the bargain. This was the dirty, damp confetti and trampled flower petals stamped into the muddy ground and tossed about by the wind long after the parade had ended. This was the sad, lonely echo in the hall now that the dance was over. Here in this room was grief. But grief was love in its second shape. And when I read that quote, it immediately made me think of two separate other quotes from people. The first one is Andrew Garfield talking to Elmo. I don't know if anyone else has watched that interview, but it is for a children's show. And this is what Sesame Street does so well, obviously, yes. is it talks about big emotions and big feelings in ways that kids can yes. connect to and understand. But Andrew Garfield talks extensively, lots and lots of places, about losing his mom, who is yes. like, you know, one of his favorite people in the world.
Yep.
And he's talking to Elmo, and they're talking about being sad after you lose someone. And he says, sadness is a kind of gift. It's kind of lovely to feel in a way, because it means you really loved someone when you miss them, which is exactly what this yep. quote is talking about. It's yep. grief is love. It's a different yep. way of feeling it, way. But it's love.
And that ties, I was going to say that ties into the quote I shared yeah, earlier
for
too.
Sure.
Same idea.
The one that yeah, you yeah. have on here that Donna said. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, and that's, I think, where this book goes. It starts with just grief, but then it turns to love. By the end, because a lot of these happen at the end of the book, it all turns to, well, yeah. grief is really love, and yep. shows that how much you loved a person.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And then I connected potentially... it to WandaVision, too, because oh. WandaVision has, I love WandaVision.
I remember watching that, though, and thinking it was so, it was funny at the beginning, but kind of where are they going? And then you get to those end episodes, and you're like, wow.
Damn, right?
Wow.
Yeah,
this
yeah.
whole show has been deep, and I had no mm-hmm. idea.
And you missed it. Yeah, you had no yep. no way to know until yep. you knew. But the quote from WandaVision, that the what is grief if not love persevering? And I was yeah. like those two quotes Dang. From Andrew Garfield and WandaVision they pop up in my head all the time whenever people are talking about grief and love. But I think this book nailed kind of the whole story that takes you from
yeah.
the being angry, the being afraid, the being feeling guilty, the feeling, you know, inadequate in many ways, to realizing that all of those things only come if you had the good fortune of loving someone.
Yeah.
That much.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I have to age myself a moment, because I remember watching Sesame Street in the 80s when Mr. Mm-hmm. Hooper died, like
yes.
in real life.
Yep.
And how Sesame Street is so good about this, handling yeah. death. It was the first... It was huge, because it was like, this is the first time they've talked about death on a children's show.
Right.
Like, this is not something that we do.
Mm-hmm.
And so I love that. I don't know if I probably have seen this Andrew Garfield one. I don't remember, but
it's worth a watch, just in general.
I've seen a lot of his interviews where he literally breaks yeah. down in an interview talking about his mom.
Yeah. He on Colbert, he gave
and he
like
just
a really
is like,
interview about
sorry,
it.
I'm crying, but not sorry, because
right.
this is how I feel.
I was so lucky to have a great mom. And when I talk about her, it makes me happy and sad.
Yeah. I think that's so cool.
And so I think I'm going to forget who the quote is from. I think it's from Ally Melanenko, which is one of my favorite middle grade horror authors, but it is relevant here. She talks about what middle grade books and children's storytelling does for kids, and that Sesame Street also does, which is it remembers that kids are going to experience these things whether you're there to help them along
exactly.
with it or not.
Exactly.
And as parents, we have a tendency to want to like protect the kids, like protect them from the bad feelings and the hard things. But fiction, and it does it for adults too, like this book does it, you know, brilliantly, is it tells you the truth.
Yeah.
About grief and loss and love in ways that sometimes we try to like shield ourselves
yeah.
from.
And you're right. You hope your children never have to. I know my parents hoped that they would not have to take me to a funeral
yeah.
when I was 5 years old. But
right.
I had to, you know, like
yeah.
they had to explain it from a very young age what had happened. And
mm-hmm.
And I've had friends that are lucky who I'd be in high school and they're like, I'm like, yeah, I've got a funeral this weekend. And they're like, funeral? I've never been to a funeral before. And I'm like, oh my God, this is like,
I know one of my coworkers who has 5 grandchildren has never been to a funeral. So it's just like, yeah. So and like, it just blows my mind. So I remember going to my grandpa's funeral when I was like mm-hmm. 6, but I didn't really know him. So it wasn't yeah. super like emotional.
Well, I have a side story that will yes. make you laugh about grief, because this episode is very deep. So, and we talk about people handling grief differently.
Mm-hmm.
So when my grandmother died when I was 16, my grandfather didn't die until I was 27, something like that. And he, had brain damage. He had encephalitis.
Oh.
And lived on his own for a long time. He was like 94 when he died. He was an amazing person. He was a World War II vet. He had had last rites read over his body like 3 times.
Wow.
Okay.
Like they found him in the war. They found him, thought he was dead, put him in the morgue, read last rites. He woke up while the priest was doing last rites. Like, hey, I'm not dead yet.
It's not time.
So amazing man. So also for him, because he was 90 something and he was so, he was a curmudgeon. He reminded all of us of Carl from Up.
Oh,
he had like the bulldog face because he's Italian. And we're at the burial. My grandparents are in a crypt and they're like stacked on top of each other.
God.
So funny. And my grandma, when we were young, used to say, oh, this is where I'm going to be buried. And when you miss me, it's just like a drawer and you pull me out. And then you like, you know, things like, because we've been dealing with death so much, she had to. And the funny thing is, there's two funny things. First, she ended up, because she went first, she ended up on the bottom. And she didn't want to ever be on the bottom. She always wanted to be on the top. She's like, I'm the ruler of the roost. I need to be.
Yeah.
So my grandfather was sliding. So they don't actually, because the stone, headstone thing or whatever, they don't fully seal it until both are gone and they know they're never going to open it again. So first of all, it was really weird that they remove the brick and there's a casket.
Yes.
Wow.
And I'm like, oh shit, that's my grandma. Oh
my God.
There she is.
And we're like, oh, and so we're daring each other. Our cousins are daring. Go move the curtain. Go move the curtain and just take a peek, you know, because that's how we're dealing with grief too.
Yeah.
Like you're trying to laugh. So the best part, when they get to the end and they put the stone back up and they start filling it with caulk to close it. And my aunt comes over and just starts dying of laughter. And we're like, what? And she said loudly, she goes, I hope they're using the right kind of caulk because my dad would be super pissed if it was like bathroom caulk.
Right.
So now all of us older cousins are dying. We are laughing so hard. We're sobbing. So it looks like we're absolutely hysterically freaking out about my grandfather being buried. And then the best part, the guy doing it heard the comment. He stops, looks at the caulk.
See, he's like, got it.
And we still talk about it, but we talk about the fact that it had been a particular hard few years and we'd all had a lot of loss. And you get to that, and that's how we dealt with our grief at the moment, was just to laugh. And it helped that he was 90 some years old.
Yeah.
And he was ready to go. He wanted to go. Yeah. He's like, I'd lived without my wife for a long time. All his friends were dying. He was ready to be done, but we're like, hope that's the right caulk. So we still joke about it today, and it's been 20 some years.
Yeah.
Oh, I could tell you so many funny stories about my dad's funeral, which was like one of the hardest days of my life. Like when we're getting ready to go down the aisle at church and we can't find my mother. And I go look in the ladies' room. She's not in there. And next thing you know, she comes out of the men's room. And I'm like, Mom, what were you doing in the men's room? And like everybody heard me. And same sort of thing. But that, again, that goes back to that same quote I was telling you about. If you can laugh at it, you can live through it. It
means you have good memories. So it's not always. Yeah.
We have a story from my Aunt Mary's funeral that comes up quite literally all the time because we think it's the funniest thing ever. And we are not overly emotional in terms of like.
Right. Right.
I mean, Marianne, you brought up like your dad would have said, like, get over it or whatever. My family, not religious at all. We're all a bunch of atheists and we're just kind of like, people die. Like it's, we do not get super, super emotional about it. But my Aunt Mary, who was my grandfather's sister, miserable woman. Like if we're talking Wizard of Oz, she is Mrs. Gulch, like all the way. She's a grumpy, grumpy lady. She used to give like the weirdest Christmas gifts. You would get a baggie from her house and then whatever she could find in her house, which might be a half used bar of soap.
Aunt Bethany from Christmas Vacation.
Yeah. Like 100%. She would show up with like I got 1 year a half used bar of soap that I know just came out of her bathroom and we were all just like, okay. She
would really have hair on it.
Yeah, for sure. She was super old when she died. She was a good enough aunt. Like she wasn't like the worst person on the planet, but just such a weirdo. But when she died, she had an open casket and we went up, you know, you get in the line and you go up and you say whatever. And I get up there and I'm with my cousin Kelly, who's just a year or two older than me. And she grips my wrist like a death grip. And I'm like, what the fuck? And she goes, look at her hands, look at her hands, look at her hands. And she wore the same coral colored nail polish every day of her life.
Gosh.
And they had taken the nail polish off to do the thingy, and right. they didn't repaint her fingernail.
Oh, shit.
So she's just in the casket. Just the one fingernail's got no nail polish on it. She's like, she's going to haunt us forever because my grandma haunted us. She still haunts the double wide they lived in. And we were convinced Aunt Mary was coming back for us if we did not fix her nail polish. So we roped in my sister and Kelly's sister, Carrie, who are a few years younger than us. And we went to like the pharmacy store or whatever, the corner store.
Like a drugstore.
Like a drugstore. And we're in like a farm town. Like we are not like, it's not like a Walmart. We're talking about like the corner store. And we found nail polish in her color of coral. And then we went back to the calling hours and had to get back in line.
God.
And then we had to pretend like we were crying really hard because we had to have a reason to be up there for super long.
Right.
So we're like sobbing. And while I've got my arm around my cousin, she's painting my Aunt Mary's nail in the casket. So like... Because she was going to kill us if we didn't. We couldn't send her into the ground.
Can't send her into the afterlife without her nail polish. Yeah.
So we painted my dead Aunt Mary's fingernails, and we had to give them all a coat because now they got a match. So we painted her fingernails while she was in the casket. And then we just went on our merry way as if that was like a totally normal thing to do.
Totally normal. Totally normal.
Totally normal. But she didn't have kids or anything, so it was us. Like we had to help her out,
make sure she was
all set and ready to go.
But you know, it's going back to our book a little bit. If you chose to sleep, you would lose those memories too.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, and that's what's hard, to not think of just the grief of losing someone, but you lose all the funny stuff too.
Yeah.
All this right. So how about? I know. How about we talk about food?
And now for food. This book, I don't recall there being like a ton of like very.
I don't either.
Like in some of the other books, there was like very, very specific meals that like factored into the story. But I do remember the idea of like car snacks and road trip snacks kind of.
They
being,
do.
Because they stop several times. Yeah, they stop several times and they're like, well, what are you getting from the gas station?
Yeah.
And I
they eat Kit Kats in the hotel, the motel, because it's the only thing, I just read this part, the only thing that will come out of the vending machine without it getting stuck.
Yeah. So like you're stuck with your Kit Kats.
Right.
But I think that in and of itself, the kind of idea that like, this is a journey, not like they're trying to get somewhere. They don't got time to be stopping for like meals and like this, that, the other.
And nobody does. When you're on a road trip, as much as you, I think, and at least for myself, you always want to stop and enjoy the local color. But at the same time, you want to just get where you're going.
Get to your hotel or whatever for the night so that you can, Yeah.
So I didn't think food was quite as big in this one.
Not as big. Yeah. I don't think there was any conversation. Not much about that.
And for the, talking about like the places, I think California is where the poppy fields were. Well, isn't poppy is the California flower too, isn't it?
It is.
Is it?
I believe so.
Let's Google this. It is. It's the California poppy.
Yeah. But also, think about it. California's always got this reputation as being like new age. And so that's a perfect location for the poppy fields to be located.
Yeah. Yeah. Specifically, it's the California poppy is like orangish yellow.
Yeah.
But it symbolizes the gold rush. But
that's interesting.
But we talked a little bit before about what poppies symbolize. I mean, I'm thinking too that the English wear a poppy. World War One. Is that what
It was Armistice Day, which we now like we recognize as Veterans Day. I don't know if they still do Armistice Day in England or not.
You still will see something like they'll all be. I don't know. I'll see an interview or a talk show, and everyone who's British is wearing a poppy.
Yes,
a red poppy. So we talked about.
The 11th hour of the 11th day of the 11th month of 1918.
We talked about the Wizard of Oz connection with the poppy fields, the fact that poppies mean rebirth in Greek mythology. So it really was the perfect thing to...
And I think the visual of all the people like in the red pajamas.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Giving the kind of visual cue of a poppy field too is perfect.
I like that.
Yeah.
Other places, it's they funny, they go in a roundabout way from Kansas. Mm-hmm. They go through Oklahoma and then they go through Arizona.
Were they flying out of Kansas though, or were they started in Kansas and were flying out of Missouri?
They're flying out of Kansas.
For some reason,
where,
I thought it was Missouri.
Because that's where Ava lives. She lives in
Ava's
Kansas.
Yeah.
And she's from, and so she's the one that just takes the car there. Sasha came from New York. Was it, mm-hmm. did Ray come from Missouri?
He was from Massachusetts, wasn't he? Like,
was he?
For some reason, I feel like he
or
was
Skye
like,
came from Missouri. I feel like you're right. Somebody came from Missouri. Felt like Ava was having a conversation about, like, we learned that she's from Kansas.
Yeah, Topeka, Kansas is like a little hop, skip, and a jump from the Kansas City airport.
So maybe she's from Topeka, Kansas.
Yeah.
And she goes to the airport, which is on the border,
yeah.
which
because that's sense. That's the biggest yeah. airport in the area.
Yeah, Ray is from Boston.
Yeah.
Because he was like that stereotypical Boston firefighter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because she, I know Ava's like, I can just drive home.
Right. So she was
Sasha's
from
Boston.
New York.
No,
Sasha is the one who's like local, I think.
No, Sasha's from Boston.
Says she's from Chicago. Well, ChatGPT tells me.
Here's an example of why ChatGPT is wrong. Because on page 13, it says, Sasha lived in Boston. She never worried about tornadoes.
Oh, okay.
But I feel like it was in that first because Ava literally calls a car.
Yeah, Ava's
to take
from
her
Kansas.
To the airport.
Yeah.
Plus, she lived with her grandma.
Yeah.
Just like Dorothy did.
Just like Dorothy lived with her
even though she's not our Dorothy, but still.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Before I put
Three
it down.
And a half hours until her flight, an hour-long cab ride for her house in Topeka to the airport in Kansas City.
Yeah.
So she
I looked it up first. I put it on there for a reason.
Sorry, we doubted you.
Wow.
Where in California is the poppy fields, though? Do we
it
know?
It says, like, Southern California, but because she's flying into LAX.
Yeah. That makes the road trip make sense. Because if you're coming from Kansas City, Missouri, you're going to cut through the panhandle of Oklahoma.
Of
then
Oklahoma.
Mexico,
and then,
Phoenix, and into Southern California.
Okay.
That's going to be your, like, straightest route.
Straightest way.
As someone who has driven that way a few times.
I know.
I've never
And it avoids the Tornado Alley. If you cut down.
If you cut down a little.
If you cut down lower through, like, Oklahoma City.
And the desert? Do you go as much through the desert? Like...
You'd take 40 across. I'm going to get really road trip nerdy right now. So if you cut down to Oklahoma from Kansas City, you come down 335 or 44. It does like this. Like it goes shoop.
Yeah, okay.
And then you take 40 all the way across Elk City, Oklahoma, one of my favorite spots to stop.
Nice.
But it literally, that's the route that takes you through like Amarillo and then Albuquerque.
Okay, yep,
and
yep.
And then you're headed to Flagstaff or Sedona.
Yep, which is where they go to Sedona. They go to,
And then it sends you, it shoots you in just above Los Angeles. So you get into kind of the lower end of, you know, if you go down to Phoenix, that'll take you right into Los Angeles. But if you stay up at like the Flagstaff, Sedona end, it takes you into just above LA, depending on where the poppy fields is.
One of my dream road trips is Route 66.
I want to do
that. I just want to start from Chicago and just like drive across the country. That is like, so to me, this road trip, I was like, oh my gosh, I'm kind of jealous that you're doing this.
Yeah. When we did our road trip, we went from New York down through like Tennessee and then across through Oklahoma and like the corner of Texas and then up from Phoenix all the way up to like Yellowstone and then across the top side. Like,
wow.
It took like 6 weeks. It was awesome.
Yeah.
That's cool.
But it was a nice loop, but we didn't do California. We didn't have quite enough time to make it all the way across. So that's on our list to like do California straight up the coast.
Yeah.
Someday.
Which is funny because that's what I know they said southern, but I kept thinking closer, like further north, like Bakersfield.
Yeah.
Because that's where there's lots of open land and stuff. But
yeah.
I guess I've spent too much time in San Diego between San Diego and LA. To me, that's Southern California.
Yeah.
Well, they're still considered Southern California, a little higher than that. So that makes sense.
So I know we drove out of LA to go to the Grand Canyon. And I know we drove through lots of desert area. I don't remember what roads we were on. So I was probably reading while Jerry was driving.
That makes sense.
We drove from San Diego to Sequoia.
Wow.
Yeah, it was a long drive. I remember that.
I do all the driving when we're road tripping. So I like try and drill into what? My head, like where we're going, what we're doing.
Bakersfield is not that much that far north of Los Angeles. So there is a good chance that Bakersfield it could have been. Like it just made sense to me. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Very interesting. So all right. So our final thoughts on this.
I loved it. It's my final thought.
I feel like we need another episode. We could just keep like, let's just talk. This is one of those. We could go chapter by chapter with this book, I feel like.
For sure.
I know. Like I said, I thought the other day, I was like, this would be a good book to teach because you do get some deep conversations. I think it would only work for honors for us just because you need kids that are a little more mature.
Yeah.
To handle the grief things that, because it can be triggering. For sure. But I do think that they do such a nice job of also having the fun in intertwining the deep conversations with the fun stuff and the laughter and the, so it's not all dark. So.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, for me, I mean, especially after having this conversation, I have it on my Libby request to listen to the audiobook because I really enjoy doing that when I've read a book is then to listen to it. And so now I'm really looking forward to listening to it. I might even spring for it on Audible because of the fact that I just feel like I could get so much more out of it right now after having this conversation than beforehand. So
be curious too, when you re-listen, if your thoughts change about Ray.
It could.
You know, just because you like I always tell my students with foreshadowing, you don't know it's foreshadowing until you've reached the end of the book.
Right.
That's what's so
and
hard to teach about. Then you go back and go, they said this and they said this. So you might see clues
Absolutely. I mean, we had that experience with my in-person book club last month with the book. I didn't like the ending of it. And then somebody brought up another point of view and you could be right. Maybe.
Right. That could be it.
Maybe that could change my mind. So I'm willing to be wrong. So.
Yeah. That's the thing about books. And maybe it's the time of day or time of year you read it.
Absolutely.
Too, when you start something. Oh, so Nikki Ehrlich has written another book called The Measure. And if I had seen this in the store, I would not be interested in it until reading The Poppy Fields.
Right.
But The Measure is about what would you do if you knew the day you were going to die.
God.
And I'm like, I don't want to know. I don't want to read that. But then I'm like, she treated grief so well in The Poppy Fields that maybe her writing would be different. You know, like maybe this is something I could. So I might pick that up too and see what it's about. All right. It's time now to reveal our featured book for October. We want to give you plenty of time to read and join us. So here's a few clues. The first one, this book asks, what if your godfather was none other than death himself?
Ooh. Clue two, the main character has a gift that makes her an extraordinary healer, but it comes with a price.
And clue three, at the royal court, a king's life hangs in the balance, and the heroine must decide whether to follow destiny or follow her heart.
And our next book is, drumroll
please, for drumroll!
The 13th Child by Erin Craig.
Yay!
Our episode will go live on October 21st. Tune in on all of your favorite streaming services.
And this is one of my, I talk about this book all the time when I do my horror presentation. Uh-huh. So I'm super excited to.
This is her one book I have not read. And Erin's like my friend. So
it's so good.
I'm really excited to read it because I'm like. Yeah.
So, it's a good one.
Can you get her on the show?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Probably. Yeah. She's just starting a tour right now. That would be the only thing. But hopefully, we will do an interview. I know she will do an interview with us eventually. So
yeah,
she just had her last book, The Land So Wide, just came out last week. And so she's been all around. But I think she's going to be near me next week. So I was going to pop in to
be like, hey,
where her signing was and be like, hey, what's your schedule look like?
Yeah.
So, yeah. Love all of her books.
Yeah.
Kind of fractured fairy tales.
Yeah.
YA, but also not. Like, definitely.
Yeah.
Anyone can read them. So.
All right, rolling on. That's it for now. Thank you to everyone for joining us as we talked all about the poppy fields. And by the way, if you haven't already, go grab your copy of this book. It's beautiful read, but it's also a beautiful book to look at. It's gorgeous.
I feel like I look at this cover. It's like glittery.
So pretty. Yeah.
And then look at those edges and then the inside. Whoops.
Yes.
There it is. Yeah.
Hold it up a little higher. There we go. Yeah.
Like, it's so beautiful. I just look at it and I'm like, the colors make me so happy.
It's so pretty.
So happy.
Yeah.
So, all right. If you enjoyed this episode, make sure you head to our profile. Check out the other books we have featured so far, including The Perfect Marriage, Lessons in Chemistry, last month's book, Come Fly With Me, and of course, the book that started this all, Twilight. So, and if you're looking for book recommendations each month, we also share what books we've read across every genre. Usually a huge list of books that we mention. So if you're looking for what to read, and I mean every genre.
Well, it's
what I really like
even
about
the ones we don't talk about.
Right. What I like about us is that we have diverse tastes. So we're not like cookie cutter and everybody's read the same book. So, and definitely not everything that Kit reads, but.
What do you mean? Not everyone has read Taken by the Were-Turkey?
Usually try some of the ones Kit recommends. So,
and don't forget to follow our socials, subscribe to the podcast, and please leave us a review. We want to know what you think, as long as it's a good thing.
Only good things.
Only good things.
And let us know if there's a book you'd like to see us read or cover in the book club. We love recommendations of all sorts.
Yes. All sorts.
All sorts.
So until next time, keep reading.
Keep exploring.
And don't forget to pack the snacks.